Session number 17624, John Allen, Reel 7.
Mr. Allen, Reel 7. We're talking about the food situation in the battalion, training battalion. What did you get, or what might you get for dinner?
It's again a question of remembering. I certainly remember the breakfasts, but the lunches, the dinners, would be pretty, one would call them stodgy foods, you know? Sausages, Welsh rabbits and things like that, but they were wholesome. And once I got acclimatized to their food, it was darn good, you know, it really was.
What time would lunch be?
Breakfast was approximately 7 o'clock, and that involved getting up at 6 or 6:30 sometimes. They weren't really terribly martial then on you, you know, because you were youngsters, really. And they were older men, and I think they looked on you as their sons. But they would get you up, and you would go on a jog right round the campgrounds, you know, and it took you 3/4 of an hour, and then you were ready for your breakfast. But the breakfasts were pretty similar all the time. The dinners varied, and they were rather good. You always got a sweet, invariably anyway, and then you got a tea at night, but the dinners, you just accepted them, you know. And if I had to carefully think, I would be at a loss to really tell you what it was, because it happened every day and you accepted it. And I think some men would remember it more than I could, but which sounds as if you weren't interested. Really speaking, you're not. You're just replenishing the inner man.
And this would be the lining up again for the...
That's right.
Where did you eat? Did you go back to your tent?
They had open trestle tables, and they were out there all the time, rain or shine. In fact, it did the wood good, they said. And it was, you were put on fatigues to clear them, wash the dishes and whatever, you know, the pans, the cooking utensils and things like that. And you always did your share of chores, such as peeling potatoes and things like that. And in the mornings, they used to, if you were up, some chaps used to get up voluntarily long before, and I noticed that particularly, long before Rivali. And they were strolling about, you know, and it was August, and it was a beautiful summer, 1940. And I got to do that once or twice, and it was really good to walk around just in your vest or whatever, yes, your trousers, of course, and walk around, and you would meet some of the staff, some of the NCOs and officers. And at times you did lectures inside on machine guns, and if it was in Britain, Clement, and it was part of the castle's interior that you used. And some of the rooms were splendid, even then. But that castle has now been knocked down. There are signs of it there. You can see that there's been a castle. It was a shame, really, because it was a rather beautiful place. But all in all, it was a nice introduction to the army. It's a beautiful setting.
Could you take me through a typical day in the training unit from Rivali through the various aspects of the day?
Yes. You would wake up Rivali, and it was bugle, and you would get out, line up, parade, and you would go off on your jog. Sometimes you would just do physical exercises, which a lot of people preferred to the jogging. But I like to run. I was a runner, and Some of the men surprised me. You know, some were very fit, some were needing to be made fit, and they soon got them into shape, because they were all fairly young men, and they shouldn't have been out of condition, really. And you would have your breakfast, and you would go back to your tent, whatever the parade was. If it was PT again later on, you came in and changed, and you had a PT kit. But most of it was weapon training,
drill,
and the drill took up quite a percentage of your time.
And was this at light infantry pace, this drilling? Or did you gradually move to it?
You gradually got up to that. As a matter of fact, the very first time I got into the full Durham Light Infantry or Light Infantry pace was at Darlington when we got to Aycliffe. And there was an RSM took over there, and we detrained at Aycliffe sidings, I would imagine they were. And we hadn't gone straight on to Darlington. They dropped us off. A train from Gosforth right down. And it was 140 paces to the minute, you know. And some of our boys, they didn't know what had hit them. Because if they were needing a little bit freshening up and being made fit, that surprised them. Because from then on it was, if you got the real pace, you did it. But in ordinary, on a route march, you're fairly easy. A light infantryman can do a route march easily.
As part of the early morning duties, did you have to clean out your tent? Did you have to put that into some
You
kind
did.
Of order?
Once a week, it had to be cleaned out properly. And then you had kit inspections and things like that. Now, one of the kit inspections was you couldn't stand in a bell tent. You stood outside, and your beds were there for the officer to see. So he said to me one day, "Oh, this officer came, orderly officer, and he had looked in the tent. He said, it's coming. I see a big improvement there. Who sleeps?" He pointed there, and he looked inside the tent, and it was me. He said, "You don't shave?" I said, "Yes, I shave." I thought, "Oh, God almighty." I thought, "Yes, I shave." He said, "But you don't shave." He says, "You're telling me a lie, boy." I said, "Yes, sir, I am." He said, "And you know how I know you don't shave? Your bloody razor and brush have never been used yet. And how long have you been in the army?" "I've been in about 2 months." And I said, "2 months, sir." He said, "Well, you'll shave us from now, and I'll check you for the next few days. Have you never shaved?" I said, "No." And he went like this, "No, you haven't. Well, you start shaving." So that was my introduction to that. And I shaved.
Kitty inspections, were they laid out in a certain manner?
Yes. Very, very regimental. In fact, you were shown how to do it. And woe betide you if you didn't keep to it. Even in a tented camp, it had to be. And it was amazing, because that instills respect for order and discipline, really. And this is the whole point of an army, with training like that. Because you are just one of many. And if you are bad, they won't allow it, in other words. And a lot of men used to buck a bit, but it didn't pay, because they've got the upper hand.
What happened if you lost or had something stolen?
This happened to me later on in life, going overseas. But to go back to the point we are talking of now, recruitment days and training days, they said the Army outlook on this is if someone steals part of your equipment, you go and steal somebody else's. I remember thinking, that's ridiculous, you know. And I said as much to my platoon sergeant. I said, hey, you know, Sarge, that is ridiculous. Telling a man because he's had something stolen to go and steal. He said, yeah, but you see the sense in that. You have got to think of number one, your equipment is your equipment, and you, if you've lost it, you have to pay for that. And I said, oh, yeah, no, but he said, well, why should they get away with it? I said, I know, but you're not stealing it back from somebody that stole it. You're stealing it from another man. I wouldn't do that. I said, I would rather take the blame that I'd lost something and have to pay for it. But I lost very, very little. And if I'd lost something, I could replace it fairly easily, I think. But just to go project further forward on a troop ship, everything I had was taken. Everything. Even the rifle was gone. In fact, I was a full corporal at the time and I carried a Thompson submachine gun and I had a rifle. And yet the Thompson was there, but the rifle was gone. And they searched that troop ship. And I remember the commanding officer of our draft going out to North Africa. He said, I had a report that I hadn't any kit. He said, well, it's a bloody big ship, Corporal. Get down below and get yourself some kit. So I had to. And I've made up quite a bit of it, but that's the wrong way to do things.
That's going down and taking it from somewhere else.
Yeah.
To come back again then to the training situation, you had your breakfast, you'd have your run, and then you were drilling and weapon training.
And they were most particular about the drilling. Because you forget the terms you used as a soldier. And if you fell into the army now, they would all come back to you. But what it is, you're measuring yourself away. I forget the term used. And you're getting a straight line and a distance from the next man. And that was done. They got you to the point where you were marching without weapons and you're doing the complete turn, march back again, turn, march back. And they did that and did that. And I think I forgot to tell you, I started telling you about this incident when we were on a route march as young recruits. And one man said, we stopped after an hour, say 55 minutes or so marching, and we stopped. And we were out in the country by then from Ravensworth. And one lad had reported to the sergeant that his feet were bleeding. Yeah, now, I remember Lieutenant Wade said, send him to me. I want to see this lad. He can hardly move, sir. He can hardly move. We've stopped, and he doesn't think he's going to start again. He's going to start again. Let's have a look at him. And he went finally to see him. And there was blood coming out of his lace holes in the boots. Actually blood, and he had a grey pair of army socks on. And we all heard this, you see, and we all came. And we were looking at him, and I suddenly looked at my own feet, and there was blood coming out. And I said to the sergeant, hey, Sarge, I said, I'm doing the same. He said, what? I said, I've got blood coming out there, look. He said, take your boots off, will you? So I took my boots off, took the socks off, and my feet were bleeding. There were blisters on both feet, and I hadn't felt them. So he says, and what are you going to do? I said, I'm going to march back. And he said, well, if you're going to march back, he's going to march back. He said, there's several recruits got bleeding feet, sir. Oh, let's have a look. I think we'll suspend this route march, Sergeant. We'll head back now, just about right. And when they get back, they'll have foot baths, saline, and it'll toughen their feet up. And we also want, there's a special chemical you use to rub into your feet. Do you remember it at all? And it hardens the skin. And within a week of doing that, foot baths, and rubbing this methylated spirits into your skin, you know, we were as right as rain, and I never looked back. And I reckon that they were the strongest part of my body. Feet never bothered me at all. I never had any trouble after that. And yet, it's the feet that I, when I fell down a mountain in Syria, quite a distance, and lost a couple of mules, and let them go, and I was brought to a halt. I'd ripped ammunition boots off my feet, and my feet were lacerated in hot weather, you know, 100 and odd degrees. And I was in hospital and had operations on them. And the feet came up like that, you know. And I believe to this day that that started my bone trouble. In fact, a medical officer of health in the army, when they examine you for your sick pay, the sick benefit, they said, this goes back to the army. We are sure of it. We can get you a pension. But I wouldn't go forward with it because it was about 20-something years after I'd left the army. But they said, no, no, you can get a pension for that. Well, when I finally did ask, they wouldn't wear it. They said, no one of our examiners will tell you a thing like that. But he did, and he told me why. He said, because I came across that. And it's called, he called it, and they called it in those days, IAT feet. And it stands for something. But when it came to them at Blackpool, the pensions people, telling me what my records showed, it wasn't that at all. It was epidermophytosis. I remember the name, epidermophytosis.
Can we come back to marching? Your feet were obviously important, and were they checked
and
after every loop march?
They stress that to you, how much you should look after your feet. If you want to be a soldier in the Durhams or any other infantry battalion, you take care of your feet. It's the same as getting sunburn, as they explained when you went overseas. If you go to sleep under a hot sun, your skin will burn and you will become a casualty. And that is something that you could have avoided.
Self-inflicted.
That's right. And you can be charged with that. And they warn you against things like that. And the same with your feet. Now, once they explained that, you chaps, you saw them everywhere, bathing their feet, because they knew damn fine that they had no excuse if they were on a route march. And methylated spirits was a very popular thing. And I'll tell you another thing, too, to break in a pair of army boots. I don't know whether you've heard of this, but you urinate into the boot and leave it. Possibly some of them left it overnight, but I used to leave it for half an hour. Then I would tip it out and leave the boots to air. And, by God, it made a difference. It really did. It would bring a pair of new boots into what was virtually like a moccasin. You know, it was so different. And otherwise, you ruined your feet. And it was pointless having a new boot inflict that pain when a little bit urine would soften the leather. And it worked, you know. In fact, there was a man since the war told me that he never liked buying new shoes, no matter if they fitted him, because he always was in pain. And I told him that little ruse, and he's always used it. It's incredible.
Drills that you did. Did you learn to do the drills to numbers?
Well, yes. When you think of it, you did, because it was 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, which was, for instance, 1, 2, 3, shoulder. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3, lift. 1, 2, 3, shoulder. 1, 2, 3, arm away. And you were standing at the slope. And you only did that maybe 2 days, and then you dispensed with shouting out the numbers. But often you would get one man or two men, sometimes you see it in Dad's army, and that old soldier is the slowest of the lot, and they would send them away to the what was the term they used for that? The boys that were behind, sort of style, the slow boys. And you would see maybe six of them under a corporal until they got themselves up to the standard that the rest were. And we took to it like ducks to water, really. And in fact, I thought it was a very useful thing to know, because it made you respect each other, you know.
After the drills, then you presumably go through then to lunchtime. Did you have a mid-morning break?
You did. You had about 10 minutes or so, and you would just sit on the grass, if you were on a grass parade ground, and it was a beautiful summer, as I say, and you would get interesting things, you know. You would get, maybe a sergeant was passing, and he was one of the ex-Dunkirk lads, and the sergeant that hadn't been there, which was a terrier, he would shout across at him, you know, "Would you give the boys a little bit of your history from Dunkirk, Sarge?" "Yeah, I'll be in a few minutes. Give me a few minutes." And he would come back and they would take up half an hour like that, you know. It made you think there's more to this than just drills and route marches. There's that at the end of it, you know. That's what they're getting you prepared for. And it was good. And you respected these men because they'd done something that you hadn't done. You weren't overseas. You still hear these old soldiers. They're in their 80s now. I mean, I'm 75, my next birthday in the summer. And I was young compared to some of these men. But they still hark back to Dunkirk and wherever they were, you know. And I think it gives them a feeling of togetherness. It's interesting.
You then came to lunch, and you've described lunch. Were officers inspecting the lunch and asking for complaints? And if they did you dare complain?
No. At Ravensworth, we never, no orderly officer ever asked, "Did you have any complaints?" Sometimes the sergeant cook would ask you, but it was very informal. And it wasn't until we went to Gosforth that they started asking. That was the first time we'd eaten in a communal hall. And you got it then. And then we followed that on at Darlington, at Aycliffe, you know.
What made you do after lunch?
Same again, actually. Or you might go on a march. They would route march you to Northumberland Swimming Baths, Northumberland Road at Newcastle. There's two or three swim baths in the city itself, in various quarters. But the big one in the town was the Northumberland Road. And you would route march from Ravensworth once a week or once a fortnight sometimes. And you'd go and have a swim. And if you couldn't swim, and there was quite a few who couldn't, really. Some could swim well, some could just swim average. And there was... Say there were six or seven couldn't swim. They took it on themselves that a sergeant would take them in a smaller pool, which there was one adjacent to it, and they would teach them the rudiments. And as they pointed out, you may come across a situation where you cross a river, and you've got to cross a river. You might have to cross by swimming. No, and you could see fellas looking at him and say, "Good God Almighty." And I think that happened more to men in the Far East, because there wasn't here you've got fords and everything else. I suppose they have over there to a degree. But I have heard more men from the Far East theatre of war talking about when they're fording and swimming across rivers, you know, and it must have been... We cross rivers, we cross them on pontoons and things like that.
Did you, on these marches, were you singing the typical army songs of the day?
That's right, yeah. You marched at ease for quite a long time. When you marched at attention, to attention, it was a different matter. You didn't sing. and you listened to every command, you know, but otherwise you just jogged along. And it was a jog, really. You kept in step. And it was quite good. And I think the route march does a lot for you, because A, it gets you fit, takes you around, and you see how you can feel yourself becoming a better soldier, you know, because it where 6 or 7 miles was more than enough for some. Other times you march. The longest I've marched was up the coast of Northumberland, and we did about 40 odd miles almost to Berwick and back again.
What happened to men who had to drop out? The straggler, the odd one. Was there a truck following to pick them up?
No, we didn't have. But I don't remember any men actually falling out because of that. They might have fallen. I did myself on one occasion, and I have a very bad... my makeup is that I'm like my mother. She's very constipated, and therefore I used to go a very long time without going to the toilet. And we were on a route march from Ravensworth, and I hadn't been on the toilet for quite a long time, and I knew I was needing to go, and I felt it's more or less on me now. And we were in the middle of, we were marching down from Ravensworth, and we were beginning to climb up Bencham Bank towards Gateshead proper. And we were going over to Northumberland for, I think we were going to Fenham Barracks at the time. And I said to one of the corporals, it was on the side, a flanker, I said, Corporal, I want to go to the toilet. Oh, Christ. Whoa. Must you? Aye, I must, I said, because I don't go often and it's imperative. And he said, well, you'll go blinking bonkers. And so he hightailed it up to the head, got permission, you go with them. They're terrified you're going to drop out and disappear, you see. And I mean, you're volunteers, I don't know why you would drop out unless you'd found it wasn't to your liking. But anyway, he said, where are we going to go? Where are we going to go? I said, well, I'm going to the nearest house and I'm going to ask if I can use the toilet. I said, my mum would let other people use the toilet if they were needing it. So we knocked at this door and the lady looked at us. And he was a corporal and I was a private, full kit, you know. And she said, yes, you can use the toilet. Are you going to be in here, corporal, with him? No. I've got to take him back. And I managed the toilet and we jogged, more or less jogged, quick march back. But we used the pavements, you know, and we caught up with him eventually. And once you're back, you're all right. But... I don't remember any man falling out disabled, although there must have been sometimes, because some of the columns were quite long, you know, a full battalion at one time, and you don't know what's going on in another company unless you hear of it later. But all in all, we never had backups to take anybody. Mind you, were in a built-up area, more or less. You could get help and succor from various places. You would only have to go to a phone and, you know, declare, such as I did when, from Taulo, I took ill at my uncle's home in Brandon Colliery, and he said, well, what are you going to do? I said, I can't go back. I was vomiting, you know, and I don't know what caused it. It just came on me like that. And my uncle was a miner at Brandon Colliery, and he said, well, you can certainly stop here. I mean, Aunt Eliza, she'll look after you. And I go to work early in the morning, but, well, how do we tell your company or your whatever it is? I said, well, you could ring Bransworth if you wish, because I don't know the number for Tolo. Anyway, he rang Bransworth and said he had a DLI nephew who'd taken ill. What could happen? He was at Taulo with the 70th Young Soldiers waiting to go overseas. And they must have said, in fact they did say, well, can you sleep at your home overnight? Tell him to report here if he's able for the medical officer. That was the only time I saw Bransworth in my train. I'd seen it many times as a civilian. And they just gave me a clear bill of health and said, and I was on an army bike, you know, one of these heavy back pedaling bikes. And they said, how can you get back to Taolo? Should we send you? And I said, no, I've got a bike. She said, you've got a bike? Where from? I said, from Young Soldiers Battalion. We had several bikes. There's still some there. Okay, then, get yourself back to your battalion and get your battalion office to phone when you've arrived. That's how they check on you, you see.
Was there a medical officer with the training battalion?
Oh, yes.
What was the process of going sick, in effect?
Of?
What was the process of going sick, if you were...
Going sick. Well, you reported sick on your first parade in the morning, which would be your reveille.